Log Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. I'm very excited. Tonight's a special Friday night edition of the show. We just got so much going on, and, we decided to do one on Friday. And that's a cool thing. That's a good thing. Gives me a little bit of a break from painting and all the stuff I'm doing here, wrapping Xmas presents and the like. So I can take a little break and talk with a very, very extremely cool cat, Mr. Chris Morrissey. He is a filmmaker and just makes some awesome movies. Chris, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm very, very happy. I'm very excited. This is kind of cool, man. Usually Friday nights are kind of dull for me. I don't know what happened. Friday and Saturday nights used to be extremely interesting in my life. Back when I used to go to a lot of nightclubs and wolf around and whatnot. Now they're just boring. Yeah. I sit here and work and hear the clock tick.
Yeah.
And it's just sad.
Same here. Right now in L.A., we have this big rainstorm happening. So I'm sure, with Christmas and people doing everything last minute, it's probably chaotic out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, and that's one thing. I lived in Southern California. I got out of school. I went to school in Boston, and then I moved out to San Diego. And means is I was up in L.A. every weekend. I'm kidding. San Diego wasn't that bad. It was a lot of fun. Every other weekend I was up in L.A. But anyway, one of the things I was going to say is it was the most interesting thing I ever experienced. Now, are you a California native?
Yeah, actually, I was born in Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard. So I guess you could say I'm as L.A. as you can get.
That's true. Well, I don't mean to offend you. But as an outsider coming in, when it would rain, it would amaze us, because people kind of walk around going, what is this water from the sky? We're not used to it. And 300 car rides.
Yeah, everybody acts like it's. They all act like it's the apocalypse.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think I left my fingerprints in a couple of my chairs the first earthquake I rode through. Whereas the California natives are like, whatever. It's just a little bit of shaking. I didn't even have to stir my coffee. There, how about that?
We don't even seem to get that many earthquakes. I think the last one that I actually felt was probably maybe early last year, but it seems like, everyone's always worried about earthquakes in L.A., but I feel like we don't have enough of them. So it's like
right.
I'm kind of not used to, when we do have it, it's like, wow. It really takes you by surprise.
You don't want it to be built up. I'm telling you, it's the same here. I just, a couple years ago, I moved to South Florida. That's where I'm at now. And it's the big, everybody's worried about the hurricane. I went through my first hurricane this fall. And the difference between a hurricane and an earthquake's extremely scary, don't get me wrong. I'm by no means saying that or not. The hurricane, though, for 3 days leading up to it, you have the news. Everybody's freaking out. Because they don't know what's going to happen, but they know it's coming. And you watch the news, and it's like, well, the seventh seal has been cracked, and the apocalypse is upon us. And this earthquake was, this hurricane was the most boring hurricane in the world, man. It was just so boring. Missed us entirely. We had a couple flowers go off a bush. That was about it. And 3 days of preparation for nothing, but better safe than sorry. I guess that's
how they've been talking about the rain today in L.A. They've been talking about it all week and saying it's going to be the biggest storm. And, so far
right.
It's just been, yeah. That's typical, you can't believe all the news. I think they have to get ratings and build everything up.
Oh, yeah. They got to sell those Viagra commercials, man, and Golf Magazine subscriptions.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Now, you mentioned something interesting. You were born on Sunset Strip. I mean, like,
well,
your mom was going to get some milk,
strip,
or what happened?
Yeah, no. No, I was born on Sunset in a hospital, but I mean,
oh,
I figured, yeah, that's probably the, you know, it's in the heart of Hollywood. I think it was Sunset in Vermont. Yeah, Sunset in Vermont, which is funny to me because we just did my premiere for my film Heavy Makeup just down the street from it at the Los Angeles Theater. So I just thought that was kind of cool to be. Sorry, I almost dropped the phone.
Oh, no problem.
I'm like,
you're all excited.
Sliding right off. Yeah, no, but yeah, it was right down the street. So I always kind of think it's funny when certain events happen so close to, like, you know, Hollywood's my home, my hometown. So it's just fun to actually experience it in here.
Well, you know, it's that was at the if I believe if my show notes are right, and I think they are, but I could be wrong. That was at the RIP the RIP Horror Festival, right?
Yeah, we did the we actually screened two of my films. We did Heavy Makeup and Trick of the Witch, and I was the director's spotlight. So pretty much I was like the. I guess you could say, well, I would say the curator in a way of some of the films. We had Amy Wade's film Condo Hell, which that was really cool. You know, she flew out from Rhode Island and her whole family came out. And it was a really big, huge event, packed house. A lot of people, you know, really enjoyed the film. So it was a really fun weekend, and we pretty much did screenings from Thursday through Sunday and had pre-parties, after-parties. It was just a really great event. And we kind of took control of the whole thing. So, you know, we were kind of like the MC, you could say.
Guerrilla filmmakers. We are the party now. We're in charge.
You know, that's the thing with the one thing that I've noticed with filmmakers is a lot of people will take the time to make their film, and then it just kind of sits on the shelf. Or if they're lucky, it gets on Netflix or Blu-ray or whatever. But I feel like you have to really make everything in a big event, and you have to really promote the films even years later, because there's always going to be an audience for them. So that's one of the things. Anytime I have a screening or any friends are having a screening, we really try to, like, take the reins and promote and you know, get celebrities to come and do whatever we can to, like, build them up and build up the press and, you know, make it fun, because, you know, we're not a huge film studio like Paramount or Universal, but, you know, we're trying to do the indie version of that and get as much, you know, attention as we can.
Well, I think it's brilliant.
Because that doesn't sound too conceited.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I'm a big fan of film festivals. I really, you know, a couple things I want to address what you said. First, it isn't just filmmakers that do that. It is anybody in the creative field. I know painters that do that. I know musicians that do that. Writers, especially, they'll write. You know, they'll create their work. They'll do their work, and you're absolutely right. They're like, okay, I've done this, and the world doesn't beat a path to their door. They don't know about it. You know, it's a big world, and there's lots of stuff to know about out there. And you have to get the word out about it. It's just imperative, and you know, that plagues the artistic mind, I think. There has to be the cool thing, Chris, about you that I'm gleaning is that not only are you have a creative side, you also have a side of business. And it's just, you know, there has to be that yin and yang of the two in any creative field, you know. If you like to eat,
Yeah, you definitely. And, you know, making films and acting and doing everything that you're, you know, you love to do creatively, that's your brand. So it's like, I feel like, you know, you have to kind of put it all in a nutshell and just really put it out there for everybody. And you know, I have my first film was back in the year 2000, and I still have people to this day that are just kind of discovering it and saying, you know, wow, I really want to, you know, tell me about this film. Like, it sounds so cool. I really want to see it. And, you know, I just,
right.
To me, that's great. I would love, you know, for people to just go through all of my films. And if they're just now discovering them, that's a great way to, you know, build my audience and, you know, hopefully get more interest in other people, you know, wanting to go out and make films and follow their dreams.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's, you know, and film, getting back to the film festival world and whatnot, it is such a great place for indie filmmakers and whatnot. So, I tell you, I had the weirdest, most surreal experience the other day. I was, and I work through the daytime. I know a lot of people are like, oh, you know, he's a painter. He probably is up all night, you know, tortured. I'm an old man. I work best in the morning and throughout the day. That's just, I used to stay up all night all the time. But my brain just works better once it's rested. But anyway, I take a lunch. And so when I take the lunch, I flip on the TV. I never have the TV on when I'm working. But I take a lunch and I flip in around the TV, going through the movie channel. And I recognize this movie that I hadn't seen for 10 years, and I remember seeing it premiered at a film festival, the San Diego Film Festival, 10 years ago.
And oh, wow.
I hadn't heard anything about it or anything, and I remember like it was seeing it for the first time with everybody, and it was very exciting, and it had Uma Thurman in it, and she was a kind of a cougar dating this young painter, and everybody was like, what was your take? And I'm like, oh, it was an interesting movie, and I just didn't hear anything after that about it at all. And here we are 10 years later, and it was on one of the Showtime channels. You know, so I'm like,
oh,
well,
wow.
Hey, they got it on the cable, so that's a good thing. But, you know, I don't know. It could be – I'm not saying they didn't promote it or anything. It just wasn't promoted where I saw it, you know. And I'm not the end-all, be-all. believe me, you know, but I hadn't come across. But it's interesting. I really like film festivals. As a film, I'm not in that business, but it's they're a lot of fun to go to. And you're right, they're exciting. And you see these people that make movies. And it's so, for us not in the business, it's very glamorous and very exciting and just inspiring. And, you know, you see people, celebrities and stuff at these things and new movies. And it's just, I eat that stuff up. I'm a movie nut, though. I love everything about movies, you know.
Oh, me too.
I
literally have been watching movies since, you know, I was like a toddler, I would assume. My dad is a big movie lover and my mom used to be an actress. So growing up, it was always, you know, get out of school and go to the movies. Like we would see all the movies on Hollywood Boulevard at like the cinema, not the Cinerama Dome. We would, the Chinese theater. And,
wow.
Yeah, so it would be like the after school hangout to go see a couple movies and then on weekends go to the drive-in and all these, you know, like anywhere we could go to movies, it was like that was just, you know, the activity of the day. So I've always been a huge movie buff and day like I always have to put aside time to like sit down and watch a movie or try to go see one, you know, now there's so many different outlets to watch movies, but I really love to see things in theater and, you know, just look at the huge screen and just feel that whole experience.
I absolutely agree with you. We, me and my girlfriend recently bought a house a few months back here in South Florida. And one of the things that we loved about the house, one of the deciding factors is it has this ginormous, huge backyard, 9,000 square feet. And my first thought upon seeing that was, I need an outdoor theater. I have to have it. And, you know, that is in the process of being constructed as we speak. Very, very cool. I agree.
Really...
There's nothing like a big seeing something on a big screen. And I'm not talking in your house. You can have a TV the size of a bed sheet, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. That's great. But I just like a big, a big, you know, anything, you know.
Yeah, and you know, the when we were screening Trick of the Witch, we actually screened that outdoors at this venue called HM 157. It's pretty much like an artist space where bands play. And what we did is on the night of that film, we had like this huge projector that screened it on the side of the building, and it was probably almost as big as a drive-in screen, and it was so cool to see the movie projected like that. And it was so weird too, because, you know, the film's about witchcraft and stuff, and there was a big, huge full moon right over the wall while the film was showing.
I couldn't have planned it better.
Yeah, it was so, yeah, it just was like, and the funniest thing about the actual screening is we premiered Trick of the Witch on the same date that we had this screening a few years before. So it was like just so weird that Trick of the Witch wasn't even planned to be shown. And then when the festival got in touch with me and said, we want to show your films, they're like, okay, we're going to show Heavy Makeup on this night and Trick of the Witch on this night. And then it just turned out to be the same exact date.
Wow.
I was looking at. Yeah. So I was like, oh, that's so weird. Okay. I'll go with that. You know, that just meant to be. So
nice.
But
nice.
It was a really great experience. So we're going to actually try to do more. Cause it was a great venue and, just a fun experience, because when the film was done, they turned it into an after party, and they had, you know, some bands performing, and, you know, it became like they had like a club DJ. And Joe Wheeler from the UK, he flew out. He actually did the soundtrack to Heavy Makeup. And so he did a DJ set at the event, and he did like a live stream of his, some of the songs from the album. And it was just a really cool event. So like we tried to make the most of it as much as we could.
That's so cool. That is so, so very cool. Now, let me ask you, Chris, no, you are the guy, from people I know and friends of friends and whatnot, you are the independent film guy. And you kind of have this down, this process of making a film, almost to a science. I'm not saying it's formulaic. What I'm saying is you... you know, have been through the process a few times, and from what I understand, has streamlined the process a lot. How does one go? Because the reason I ask in, you know, Dubuque, Montana or something, there's some kid listening to the show right now, or perhaps the podcast of the show in the future, and they want to be doing what you're doing, you know. What is the process? Do you just come up with an idea and or do you find a story, or do you write the story? I mean, what's the, how does it all happen, you know, if you don't mind?
Well, with me, I pretty much, I'm kind of a control freak when it comes to, you know, any film that I'm going to make. Like, I have to come up with the title, I have to write the script, I have to do the casting. Like, I love doing every aspect of making a film. So even when it comes to the wardrobe and the makeup and every tidbit, you know, I have to kind of oversee or approve because to me, it's like, it's my whole vision, but I have, you know, of course the actors and everybody involved in making the film, you know, it's a group effort, but you know, I don't want to get lost in the whole thing like the film studios do, where someone writes a script and then they rewrite it with six different writers, and then you have different people, you know, directing it, and then they change the whole storyline or the vision. And to me, I would rather it be really my film, my vision. So I just, you know, I start from scratch with, sometimes I come up with the titles first, or I'll get an idea of a storyline that I want to explore. Cause I pretty much a lot of my films deal with Hollywood and people trying to become famous. And a lot of the characters are very flawed. They usually want to become big celebrities, but they're having trouble getting there. So they go to different extreme means to accomplish that, and it usually kind of turns everything upside down. So my films are pretty kind of over the top or quirky, you could say. So, you know, it's, they do explore kind of the same theme of Hollywood and fame. And a lot of that comes from me growing up here in LA and meeting so many people that moved to LA to become famous, and just always seeing, you know, just the audacity a lot of people would have,
right,
in order to, you know, they'll like do whatever they can just to like get an audition or go and, you know, crash a film set and just assume that they're going to get cast because somebody walking by in production is going to say, oh, we love your look. You know, you here, get on set right now. And we're going to start. So, you know, it's just, to me,
right,
it's kind of like a great way to use as a character arc of, you know, that their goal and then what they're going to do. And then, you know, how are they going to solve that problem? And are they going to get there? You know,
right.
So yeah, I just, you know, I pretty much write the scripts, come up with the title. And then when I cast, I usually can tailor the roles to the people that I've, you know, decided to cast in the roles. But I am open to, you know, tweaking things in the writing process. Like I usually don't do rewrites until, you know, the rehearsal time, or if we're about to shoot and I'm like, okay, this actor, you know, is perfect for this, the way they're doing the character, but, you know, let me rewrite a few things just because I think it'll work better if it fits their personality better. And yeah, I like to do things like that. So when we were filming Heavy Makeup, I didn't give everybody the full script, and, you know, it's a murder mystery. So a lot of the cast members had no idea who the killer is. They don't know what really is going on in the film. So it made it really exciting for everybody, because every time we would shoot, those actors would only get their scenes a few days before, or like a couple weeks before, and then we would shoot it, and everybody would have to, you know, they all signed confidentiality agreements where they wouldn't reveal certain plot things. I know a lot of TV shows are doing that now, like Walking Dead and American Horror Story. Everything's a hush-hush. But I kind of, you know, I did that first, I could say, because I just really wanted to, you know, make it fun for everyone. Now, at this point, I don't know if I would do it the same way, because I really had to keep track of, you know, who knew what and
who
told somebody this and that. So that was kind of hard to, you know, follow. But, you know, there were, I would say, half the cast members who saw Heavy Makeup for the first time were actually seeing, like, finding out all the plot twists and everything at the actual premiere. So that was really interesting. And, you know, there actually were a few cast members that couldn't make the premiere. So I keep getting messages saying, hey, can you send me a Blu-ray? Because I really, you know, I can't believe I missed it. And I don't want to wait until the next screening, but I still don't know what's happening in the film, and I really want to see it. So, you know, it's fun, you know, to do things like that.
Interesting. Well, you know, it's something you had struck me, and something I learned, many years ago in business. A lot of people get into collaboration and partnerships and whatnot. You know, a strong idea, though, when you were saying, you know, when the big studios do all these rewrites and stuff, it seems in any business, whenever you do a rewrite or a reevaluation, compromises are made, you know, especially if you're collaborating with a bunch of people. And the vision almost gets lost, that strong vision. It gets weaker and weaker with each reinterpretation of it. And I like your how you do it, because you keep that vision. That doesn't happen. And I think that's important in the creative process, you know?
Well, you know, the thing that early on when I first started writing and wanting to make films, you know, I did, I was open to collaborating, and I did, you know, spend a few weeks, you know, kind of co-writing things with other filmmakers that I had met. And, you know, what I found out is, you know, when they would, you know, change certain things that I wrote, and then I wanted to change things they wrote, it just became a totally different film, and nobody was happy on either side with the changes. So at one point I said, look, you know what? I think you should finish making this script, you know, you make the film, and, you know, I'll be like overseeing it or whatever, you know, I'll help,
right.
Sorry, there's like
I'll be your number one general.
I hear you.
Yeah, because I actually want everyone to, you know, stay true to their vision. So it's like if somebody's writing something and they're so passionate about it, I want to see them make the film that they want to make. And, you know, that way when it comes to me making a film, I'm going to make the film I want to make, and I can change things and do whatever I want. And I only have to answer to myself. Actually, it's so funny, too,
right.
Because Cher Cherie, who you've interviewed before, you know, that one, the one thing I love working with Cher is I could literally throw a script in front of her and be like, okay, this is what we're filming next. And she's just like, okay, you know, she's totally excited and she'll go with it. Like, she trusts in my vision enough to where I really don't have to worry about her saying, oh my God, I just read this and I hate it. Like, I don't want to film this.
Right.
You know, she loves just pretty much anything I throw at her. So I really enjoy working with her because, you know, it's just a great, you know, it's like she's almost like, you know, just a sponge that can just soak up any character that I throw at her, and she'll just shape it in a way that I know to deliver, you know, such a great performance.
Mm.
She's pretty much been.
Well, I've never worked with her.
All of my films,
but I do. Well, like I said, I've never worked with her, but I do know her, you know, socially and whatnot. And she's just always, it's such a positive, upbeat mood, you know.
Yeah.
The end of the world could be happening, and Cher would be just smiling, you know, making sure everybody was as comfortable as they could be as the end comes down. She's just a really one of those people that you like talking to, you know, or being around. That's the impression I get.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and the great thing about her is when it comes to actually filming or doing the grunt work behind the scenes, like, she's very no-nonsense. So it's like if people are slacking off and, you know, texting in the middle of a camera setup and we're about to do a rehearsal and, you know, we need everyone to really focus, you know, she'll be like, hey, put your phone away. Like, she's very – she takes it so seriously, and it's really great because it's like you always need somebody that's kind of be on set that's going to crack the whip here and there. And I tend to be a little bit too nice where like, oh, I don't want to tell them not to do that because then they're going to get mad, you know. So it's like it's fun to have somebody there that actually can, like, make everyone feel good, but then, like, crack the whip if needed. And, you know, so she's really great. Producer, actress, and just all around. And she's actually working on a new project that's going to be, you know, something that she's directing. So that's going to be really exciting to see because I think she's going to make a really great director.
Nice. Now, see, Chris, you and I are the exact opposite when it comes to working. I'm very nice and I'm friendly with most people until we're working, and especially if my name's on the door. You know, if my brand image is at risk, I get real. I'm just not pleasant to work for. I've been told many times. Because I don't have the social skills, I guess, that you do. Whereas if I'm trying to do something, I've never made a film or anything ginormous like that. Bit smaller type things that we do, and you know, I know the way I want it to go. I am a control freak like you, though. I really am, and delegation is very hard for me to do, because just experience, you know. It's just, you know, once you've been around a bit, you're like, oh, there really is truth in that if you want something done right, you know, or at least the way you see it, you know, the way you want it. It's interesting. I've tried to get better at that. That's one of the things, you know, in as artists, we're always trying to get better at particular skill sets. It sounds like you've got the working with people and down really well. And I salute you.
Well, I just like everyone to have a good time, you know, because to me, it's like, you know, it's not brain surgery. I mean, we're actually having fun. You know, it's such a great thing to be acting and filming. And this is just, to me, it's like, you know, it's like playing, you know, when you're a kid playing hide and go seek or whatever. You're just like doing these imaginary circumstances, but you're just kind of living it out and on camera, and it's just, it's such a fun thing. So it's like, there's always going to be stressful things, and we've had so many times where we've been filming and, you know, certain, like, we've lost locations, or, you know, certain people, certain actors didn't show up, you know, at the right call time, and we're scrambling. We only have like an hour at this one location, and we have to move around the whole script just to, you know, accommodate the location. So, you know, there's always frustrating things that happen with filmmaking or with whatever you're doing. But, you know, I just try to have a smile on my face and just try to just tell everyone, you know, relax, have fun. You know, we're going to get it done. And, you know, it's got to be a fun experience, because when it's all over, you know, then there's the whole aspect of, you know, promoting the film and getting the word out there. And it's like, if people have a bad experience making the film, they're not going to want to stick around for the, you know, screening and all
true.
That. So it's like, it's got to be fun for everyone.
Right.
I think everything that I've done, even, you know, when I'm like, I act, you know, doing acting and, you know, just other jobs, I always try to, you know, go with it with a fun, try to have fun with anything that I do, because, you know, who wants to be stressed out?
Right. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because you do have some, in my show notes here, it shows that you do have some interesting, you know, past work. It says here you worked on Twin Peaks. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, I started out acting. I pretty much, you know, mm-hmm. growing up, I wanted to be an actor. And then, you know, when I turned, I always did, you know, plays and different acting schools growing up. And then when I turned 18, I was like, okay, I'm really going to go out there and just try to, you know, book jobs and be a professional actor. And that whole thing, you know, I it was so eye-opening, because, you know, you think, and a lot of people think this, that the minute they go on an audition, they're going to get like their dream role and get cast and start, you know, basically become a big star. But, you know, I had so many people where, like, I got an agent and they're like, you know, we have all big ideas for you. We want to see you do this and that. And then you never get called. Like, they don't call you for a couple months, and you're like, where's all these auditions you promised me? You know, what's going on? So that was the thing where I kind of took it in my own hands, and I started calling production companies myself and saying, hey, can I send out my headshot? Or, you know, going and trying to approach people that I knew were working on projects or writing things, and I'd be like, hey, you know, is there anything that you have me in mind for? Is there anything I can do to, like, help make the film come together, like, you know, try to get financing or whatever. So I pretty much did a lot of networking in those early days of trying to be an actor, but I found that, you know, I would get roles here and there and they were all great, but, you know, you have to have a day job. So I started working, for Roger Corman's company, Concord Studios, and I was the receptionist. I actually got the job through trying to get acting jobs with his studio. So I was sending in my headshot and calling up and just saying, hey, I'm an actor. You know, I know you guys are filming this film. You know, is there anyone I can contact to do an audition? And they're like, No, but if you want to, if you know how to answer phones, why don't you come in and, you know, work for the day? And I was like, what? Oh, okay. So that pretty much led to me being
a
receptionist there.
Get your foot in the door, you know?
Yeah.
Get your foot in the door. And
yeah, and of course I'm thinking,
talk about
I'm
tenacity.
Yeah.
I love that.
You know, I dropped everything that day, and I was like, okay, I'm going there to answer phones. And of course it started off, you know, like, what did I get myself into? I'm sitting here pretty much just winging it. And of course I'm thinking, mm-hmm. okay, well, maybe I'll get cast in something. Maybe one of the filmmakers will see me and say, you have that look that we're looking for. And of course it actually, you know, here and there I got to be like, you know, in some scenes where they needed somebody, and I was actually on the phone answering calls, and they were like, hey, when you're done, we need you to come over here and be in this lineup of they're doing a police lineup. Can you be one of the guys in the police lineup? I'm like, okay, sure. And then as soon as it was done, I had to go back and answer phones. So that was like how I first kind of got my foot in the door with the whole acting thing. But I just never had time after that to do acting. So that job mm-hmm. led to me working for Interview Magazine, and I ended up working at Interview for like 6 years, I think. And that's where I got into writing. So
Interview was, I've heard people that I've known over the years. I didn't know anybody who worked in the LA office. In the New York office, I knew a couple people. And I'm thinking of, there's three different people I'm thinking of right now. And they either really loved it, they said, oh, it's phenomenal, it was fantastic, or, oh my gosh, it was the hardest job I've ever had. Not to put you on the spot or anything, Chris, was the LA office like that? Too extreme?
No, you know, it's so funny because it was actually, our office was at the Chateau Marmont Hotel. We had a bungalow right by the pool. It was actually, you know, right, literally, my desk was, the way it was set up is like, you know, we had, the bungalows have like a living room and then a bedroom. So the bedroom was my boss's office. The living room area was my desk, and then our little lobby area. And it was pretty much the two of us working together. I was an assistant. So I was the assistant to the manager of the LA office, and she oversaw pretty much everything. I was there, you know, the whole time looking out the window, and I'm seeing all these celebrities coming and going that are staying at the Chateau Marmont. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh my God, you know, like, that's so cool. Like, you know, I just bumped into this person going to get the mail. And, you know, so it's like I ended up making a lot of cool contacts there, and that's when I started thinking, instead of me trying to be an actor, because obviously I don't have time if I'm working, you know, like 12-hour days at Interview, maybe I should mm-hmm. try to do writing or make a film. And that's when I started writing my first scripts, and then I would get these actor friends of mine together and say, like, you know, hey, like, let's take this script and let's, you know, let's try to get financing, or let's, maybe we should just make it ourselves, you know, if we can come up with the money. And and the next thing I know, I'm like, I'm making my first film, and I pretty much from then on just started making films. And I've always acted still here and there, you know, in between making my own films. And
right,
that's the thing. It's like once you're making a film and you're around other filmmakers and they know you like to do acting, then you don't even have to audition. It's like, oh, hey, Chris, guess what? I'm filming this, you know, film, and I have a role for you. So here, come over, you know, we're going to film, you know, in a couple right. months. So here's your script. And so that's pretty much how it's worked for me lately. Is I'll make a film, and then I'll do
awesome.
Some acting, and then I'll make another film. And now that I've kind of gotten the hang of just, you know, juggling everything around, now I really want to pursue the acting part of it as well. So my goal for the new year, I have two films that I'm actually acting in at the middle of this new year. But then I'm also going to start working on my new film, which I'm in the very early writing stages of and kind of plotting everything out. But so I'm hoping I can make at least one new film of my own and then, you know, see where this whole acting thing goes. Because I love being behind the camera, but I still get that bug of, you know.
Have that bug.
Acting.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
which is kind of cool,
you know,
for me because, you know, since everything
these days,
it's like you're promoting your films, you're promoting yourself, you're promoting other people's stuff. So it's like you might as well do it all.
Exactly. Now, let me ask you, with filmmaking, independent filmmaking and whatnot especially, two aspects that seem incredibly daunting to me. The world has kind of changed a little bit in all of entertainment, really. Getting the money for the project, financing a project, and then distribution of the project, self-distribution. Are those as daunting as I'm imagining them to be, or is it not so bad once you have a kind of a formula?
The thing is, when I first started doing it, it was like trying to learn a foreign language, because it's like there's so many, you know, trying to get financing and trying to, do I have to send my script in and have different agents rejected, or do I have to have a big film studio, slam the door in my face? So I think the thing is, you know, if you're creative enough to where you can package everything together and really pitch things to the right people, you will get people to back it. You will get financing, but it's a lot of work. I mean, that's the part that I hate, because, and I don't want people to say, oh yeah, we're going to give you money to make the film, but we want you to, you know, change the title and edit the script down to an hour and a half. And so a lot of the stuff that I've been doing, you know, I've had to, you know, put a lot of my own money in, which of course, you know, it gives you the freedom to be as creative as you want to be. But then, you know, you become in that box of like, oh my God, I'm like a struggling filmmaker and all that. So there's like so many pros and cons, and I know a lot of people that are financing their own films. I know people who are working with studios, and I think either way, it's a big daunting thing. So it's like you just have to do whatever kind of feels comfortable and whatever feels the easiest. Because a lot of people tend to give up the minute something gets too complicated. I've seen so many people start projects and, you know, they just think. I was just talking the other day with a filmmaker friend of mine, and she said, God, I've been sitting on my script for like almost 10 years, and I've attempted to have the film made three different times, and I'm just wondering if I should just give up. And I was telling her, no, you at least make the film yourself. I mean, nowadays you can get equipment for really cheap. You can even buy some of these cameras that shoot film quality. You get yourself a small crew, make the film, do whatever you can. Even if you have to make a little trailer of your script and do like a little 20-minute thing with the best scenes, and you can use that as kind of a little calling card to show studio people. You know, there's so many things you can do, and with social media these days, when I first started doing films, I mean, it was just at the beginning of, you know, the year 2000, like Y2K stuff, everyone was freaking out like the internet was going to, explode or whatever. I didn't have that at my fingertips, but now there's such a, you can pretty much do so much with social media and with Facebook, Twitter, and, you know, and that becomes a whole job.
Who would have thought that coming, you know?
That's
interesting.
A big...
I wish I would have thought of it. You know, I would have thought of
Well, you know,
oh, man,
funny,
I tell you two
I,
things.
I actually,
Oh, I was going to say, there was two things I didn't see coming. And I'm, you know, in a kind of a half snarky way, I kind of consider myself a bit of a futurist. I didn't see smartphones coming and texting, you know, the whole phone thing carrying around all human knowledge. I didn't see that coming. And crowdfunding, I didn't see coming. And it's a brilliant idea. It's so simple. I wish I would have saw it coming, but it's I didn't mean to cut you off. What were you saying?
No, I was just going to say that I actually at one point had really considered, you know, hey, you know, maybe I should do crowdfunding for my next film. But I've heard so many horror stories from other filmmakers about how they, you know, they tried to get their project off the ground and, you know, they got a few people to support it. But, you know, when it all comes down to it, it was like a huge headache. And then there's all, you know, the aftermath of having to make sure your project gets done and you got to live up to whatever the promises you made.
Right.
If somebody donates money, you've got to give them this, this, and this. And they're scrambling to get everything together to try to, you know, make sure that everybody is getting what they're paying for. So to me, that seems a little scary because I would feel like, you know, oh my God, what if I couldn't get them, like, you know, the right posters that they were promised or like the soundtrack or you know, whatever they're promised. So it's like that to me sounds a little bit too overwhelming. So I'm kind of happier to just either have a studio handle my film or me handle it, like whatever seems a little bit easier and less daunting. So, I mean, it's a great idea.
Oh, absolutely.
Funding, but I don't know. Like, area that I haven't really explored.
I had a couple guys, guys and gals, I should say, filmmakers that I knew, when I lived in California, and they, this was kind of interesting. They would have me, they'd give me a couple pages of a script they were trying to get made, and not the whole script, but just a couple pages, and they would tell me, we need a painting for this meeting. A couple of them in particular like to go in with an easel, put the painting up, and they would, especially if they had a pretty strong meeting, they thought it was going to be pretty strong, they would give the people the painting, that particular investor and whatnot. And I painted a lot of paintings like that to do for that. And now I don't, not so much anymore, but I have had a couple people on the crowdfunding side. It's kind of the same thing. Hey, can you paint a picture of this scene from the or this person from the painting or the film, and we're going to give it away as part of the crowdfunding. And I'm like, well, you know, that's fine. The check clears. I don't care what you do with it, you know, kindling, it's fine. But it is a strange thing, you know. I remember going to so many parties, fundraising parties, when I lived in California for various film projects, you know, and not full feature films like you make. I mean, shorts and stuff, you know. That's kind of, I mean, did you start out with shorts or did you always say, we're just going to make a full blown, you know, film here?
Well, you know, my whole thing with shorts is I feel like shorts never get seen. Because people don't have, you know, it's like you're going to watch it maybe on YouTube or you're going to see it at a film festival if you're even going to the film festival. So my whole thing with shorts is they're great, but you could probably make a feature film for a little bit more than you would pay for a short. Like, because I had a friend who made a 10-minute short film for $10,000, and I thought to myself, that's just a lot of money that is just, you're making a film that no one's going to see. Like, why don't you put that $10,000 into getting, you know, getting a good camera and getting some film equipment and, you know, start making your feature. Of course, it's going to be more than $10,000 to make, but, you know, get yourself to the right start, because I don't know. Shorts just don't seem to really have a huge audience. I know there's people that love shorts and they love to, you know, be a part of them, but I don't know. So I always had it to where I wanted to make films and, see them in a theater, and you know that was the big thing. So even now, I'm not so in a hurry to have my films go on to DVD and Blu-ray because I'm still getting theater screenings out of it, and people are actually showing up. You know, so to me, it's like, you know, enjoy the experience of seeing it in a theater and showing it at a theater. And then later on when, you know, there's no audience for it, then people can watch it on demand and watch it on their phones and all that.
On Netflix.
Of course, you know, yeah, I mean, I see people all the time watching things like at Starbucks on their iPad. And it's like, to me, that's just, you're not going to really remember the film too much or really focus on it if you have people talking in the background and coming and going and phones ringing and, you know, so I love the theater experience, and I kind of want to keep that alive because I know a lot of the theaters are starting to, you know, not have the greatest business, and a lot of theaters are closing down, and I don't want to see that happen like the drive-ins. The drive-ins are gone pretty much. There's only a few. I think there's only one or two in California. I'm not sure.
I agree. The ones here are flea markets now. You know,
yeah,
that's what they've turned into. There's no movies being played at them. And that's a shame.
Dude, that's sad to me because I loved when
theater.
I was a kid.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That was my favorite thing, to go on, you know, Saturday night and, you know, get pizza and sit in the, watch a movie and you're in your pajamas and all that. And of course, you know, you can't do that now because there's no, I think there are like a few drive-ins, but you got to worry about getting mugged or probably mosquitoes. That was the one thing I got bit by a mosquito and I ended up getting West Nile virus. So, I was like, I don't want to get bit by a mosquito, you know, again. So, you know, I think that's one thing, like, if there was drive-ins around the nowadays, you'd have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Oh, man. Oh, that's bad. That is bad. Well, folks, we have a link up to Chris's website. Chris, it's very easy to find, www.chrismorrisseyfilms.com. And it's a very cool website, very cool. And it shows all of the various projects that Chris has going on and working on and whatnot. Lots of cool stuff here, man. Lots of cool stuff. I like it. Now,
thanks.
You're also on the website, there's links to Chris's various social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, et cetera. Very, very. What are your thoughts on, do you have a particular favorite social media platform you like, Chris, more than others, or what are your thoughts on social media?
I think lately I've kind of favoring Instagram because, you know, I like Twitter, I like Facebook, but everything seems to get lost in the shuffle. So I think with Instagram, it's a little bit more visual. And, you know, I haven't joined Snapchat. I've tried it a few times. I think when I start making my next film, I'm going to do a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. I do have a Snapchat. Not Snapchat. I've been doing some of the Instagram snaps on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I'm going to do is try to explore that a little bit more. But, I think Instagram has been fun. My Instagram is Chris Morrisey Films, and then my Twitter's just Chris Morrisey. And then Facebook's Chris Morrisey, but for some reason people are saying they go on there and when they try to search for me, they can't find me. So I'll have to check into that. But
I never had a problem with pages. Oh, that's cool. That's very cool. And, and you're on IMDb
pages.
And all that kind of stuff. And,
IMDb. I love the fact that, you know, filmmakers and actors, anybody creative, I mean, you like with your art, it's such a great tool to be able to use all these different outlets
to get the
word out there. And I love that you could reach people all over the world because I've had people from, like, you know, Paris and Italy and just people saying, like, I want to see your film. So, and I really thought it was cool that some Japanese companies want to actually show some of my films. So I'm like, okay, that would be really cool, because I would love to go to Japan and show the movies there, because I know they love, the type of films that I make. They'd probably go crazy over my films.
And
that's definitely something I want to have done, you know, target like more of an international audience, because I think that's just so many people love stories and different types of films, and I think it's just a great, you know, way to just build an audience and have your work be seen.
Absolutely. Now, you had mentioned your films have an element of quirkiness to them. I've never seen the word camp used in anybody describing any of your work. Do you think that's a bad word or a good word?
No, I actually think it's good. In fact, I think I myself have described them, you know, saying they're campy. You know, my films are really hard to pinpoint the descriptions in a nutshell. I almost don't like to tell people what the films are about,
a genre,
until they actually see it. Like, like with Heavy Makeup, you know, the basic description of the film is it's about a serial killer stalking Hollywood actresses, but there's so much more going on in the film. And when you see it, you'll understand, but I just like that element of surprise, and I love people to leave the theater and just being like, what the hell just did I see? Like, they're thinking about it and trying to dissect everything, and it's just that, to me, that makes it more interesting, because I love, you know, like David Lynch did that movie Inland Empire or Mulholland Drive, and, you know, it makes you think, like, well, what was that? What did I just see? You know,
Exactly. Who was the guy behind the diner there? Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. And that's the stuff that inspires me as a filmmaker. When I see things
What's
like that,
surreal,
it makes you feel like, you know, there are no limits to what you can do creatively, because you're able to just, you know, use whatever comes to mind. You know, that's your vision, and that's your, you know, your creativity. And,
oh,
you know,
and I'm
some
telling
people
you,
are going to love it,
nothing,
some people are going
to hate it. Well, you know, speaking of Lynch, you know, in my opinion, there are, everybody throws around the term horror a lot. And, that opening scene of Saving Private Ryan, when the guy's picking up his arm on the beach of Normandy, trying to stick it back on his, to me, that's horror. You know, that's real heavy duty. But I remember, I tell you, one of the creepiest characters was, I can't think of his name now, Beretta, the guy in Lost Highway. You know, when he goes to the party and has himself. That is a creepy scene, man. I've seen it 100 times. Every time I see it, I'm like, that's what's keeping me up at night, following watching that. You know, I'm like, oh, I didn't like that. I didn't like it. But it's more so mood, you know, I think, than the actual dialogue or what have you. But that's interesting. I like camp and fun, because you can, at the same time, you can freak people out. But you can have fun doing it, you know, and I think that's a cool thing.
Yeah, and, you know, it just you don't take yourself too seriously when you throw in little things here and there that, you know, are fun and funny in the films. So it's like you can have full-on drama, and then next thing you know, like, some crazy little twisted thing happens, and you're like, what the hell? You know, and it's funny. So it's an all-around experience. You're getting kind of a little bit of everything when you see myself, I guess.
Now, I'm going to ask you a tough question, Chris. I'm going to ask you a tough question before we run out of time here. Let's say you're planning a movie night. Now, not including your film, what three movies would you play? What are three Chris Morrissey movies, not that you've made or anything, but that you just dig and you think other people should dig them as well?
Okay, well, I would say the one that really, the one film that really kind of took me by surprise, and I was not expecting it to be the way it was, and I love it. It's one of my favorite films. It's Three Women by Robert Altman with Shelley Duvall and Sissy Spacek. That movie, like, I've actually sat people down to show it to them, and they're like, oh my God, what it, like, I had no idea this film was, like, so crazy. So that's a movie I love showing people. I have not seen it,
and I'm writing it down, and I'm going to watch that.
Believe me,
I pay for enough movie channels, I should be able to find that on something.
You know, they really don't show it a lot. It's I think, on Criterion Collection. You could probably find it on that. I think Hulu has all the Criterion movies. But, yeah, that's a movie that I kind of didn't know anything about. And when I first saw it, I was just like, wow, this is like, I don't know what to make of it. But I loved it. And it's one of my favorite films. Gosh, off the top of my head, what else? Let's see. I actually just saw recently, I love Dawn of the Dead, the original George Romero 1978, but they just turned it into 3D, and I went to at the Egyptian Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. They did a 3D premiere of the film, and it was really cool. Like, it was a totally different experience of seeing Dawn of the Dead. I mean, who would have thought that you'd be able to see it in 3D, but it really looked good, and I was really impressed. So I hope they show it more. I'm sure they will. I think they're going to re-release it, but I would love to get people's reaction to that, to this whole, you know, because 3D movies I like, but they kind of give me a headache sometimes, and glasses really annoying. But yeah, that was just a really fun movie experience. And speaking of, gosh, I can't remember the name of the movie now. It was a double feature with The Dawn of the Dead, and I'm blanking out on the name, but it was some French film. It was a French film about a girl that goes to a boarding school, and she becomes a cannibal. And it was so weird, and it's a new film it's a new film that's coming out, I think, you know, sometime in the new year, but it's a really crazy French film, and that was just a really odd film, and I kind of want to see what people think about it. I can't remember the name, though, but it's a new film that's coming out. Oh, I think it's called Ra. Is that the name?
Okay.
It's called Ra. But it's a really weird film, and I'm curious to see what people make of it when it comes out in the new year, but it was like a preview screening, so it was a really crazy movie. But I have so many films that I love that, of course, I can't think of any of them right now, but I'd say those three. But those three would be the first ones that come to mind.
Outstanding. Outstanding. I want to go to a film night at Chris Morrissey's house. That's what I want to do. That's on my bucket list, man. That is on my bucket list.
We're actually going to be showing more screenings of my films in the new year. So if you're ever out in LA, like, you definitely have to come to one of our events, because we all, you know, we roll out the red carpet and try to make it fun. And
nice.
Like I said, we have celebrities come, you know, and just make it a full on experience.
That's always fun. You know, that's always a cool little thing, and it's really neat, and not only just because they're celebrities, but to get their take, other people in the industry that have been usually in the industry for a minute, you know, in the biz, so to speak, and very, very cool. Well, once again, folks, ChrisMorrisseyFilms.com. You got to get over there, like all of Chris's stuff on social media and whatnot. Follow. Like, subscribe, do what you got to do, man, and get out there to see these films, you know, at these events and film festivals and what have you. Very, very cool. Now, some of your older films, are they available for people to rent or watch online, or How does that work?
Yeah, we're actually that's something that's going to be happening in the new year. We're preparing to make some of them available for on demand. So that's going to be, I'd say, probably in the middle of 2017, and we're also going to release those on Blu-ray. So we're in the kind of pre-production stage on that because, you know, I want a lot of special features and audio commentary, and I'm actually trying to compile everything together to get that ready. But you know, the one thing about my films is I tend to overfilm. And when, you know, when I'm doing the first editing of the film, they could go on to be almost 3 hours long. So I've been learning to condense things a little bit better lately with my most recent film.
Right.
But with the older films, I have a lot of deleted footage, which I'm like, okay, we have to put all this on the Blu-ray because, you know, you can't. There's some scenes that are just gold and, you know, of course they didn't make it into the theatrical cut, but you want people to actually get to see, you know, some of these scenes because they're pretty crazy. So,
and that's pretty cool with the technology that you can do that. You know, it's very interesting. I find that stuff fascinating. You know, I'll watch a Blu-ray or whatnot, and yeah, I will watch the film, but then I will. You're right. You're absolutely. I will sit and watch all that extra stuff that comes on there, just because it's. I love behind-the-scenes type stuff. I'm just enough for it, and I think it's very interesting, and very interesting to me.
Well, you know,
very,
that
very
to
cool.
me, that one thing I always recommend to people for, like, filmmakers and even actors, too, like, you really should watch a lot of these behind-the-scenes making-of documentaries on the Blu-rays and listen to the filmmaker's audio commentary because you learn so much about, you know, the set, being on behind the scenes, being on the locations. It's a really good tool because, you know, so many people think, okay, I have to go to film school and follow the whole, you know, textbook way of making a movie. But, you know, to hear people's stories on these special features on the Blu-rays, like you learn so much information. So I love to sit down and, you know, watch, like, every time I get a Blu-ray, I'm like looking at it. Okay, does it have, you know, all these extra things that, you know, I hate when they come bare bones and it's just the movie and then the trailer. I'm like, where's all the deleted scenes? I even want to see the audition tapes, you know, anything that they can put on it. So I'm going to make sure they're fully packed up with everything.
That's cool, man. That is cool. Very, very interesting. Man, Chris, it's about that time. I really want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule and getting in out of the rain on this Friday night there in L.A. And being on the show. You classed to join up a bit. I loved it having you on. I can't wait for you to be back.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Anytime, man.
Yeah,
anytime.
It was really fun.
I get to talk to somebody about film. I am down, baby. I am down. Like I said, I am a film nut. I'm just a super fan of it. It's outstanding. Folks, the film, the latest film, Heavy Makeup, will be having a theatrical tour of in 2017. Chris, we made it to 2017. Can you believe that? That blows me away.
I know,
that's
so crazy. But it's going to be a great year. I'm actually looking forward to so many cool things in the works, and I'm so stoked to just start this new year.
Yeah, it has to be. You know, it's up to us now, the creative types, to make the world a little more bearable. You know.
Yeah, definitely. You know, especially with all the craziness
all
going on. It's like
over, man. Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got to do it. It's very important. You know, it's, I don't want to get into a big thing about it, but I was at a party and somebody was, I was kind of down, you know, I got to admit, you know, from a pop culture standpoint, you know, with all the craziness with the elections and all that kind of stuff. And this gal, I was talking to at a party, she said, well, that just means you've got to work harder now to make the world a better, a more beautiful place. You know, the pressure is on, baby. You're right.
People need that the entertainment. They need that creative outlet. Because when you're, that's the thing. If you're if you're dealing with stress or anything, it's like the best thing to do is just to sit back, listen to some really good music or watch a movie or a TV show, like whatever, you know, or art, you know, like what you, the painting and people collecting art, like just all of that is such a great outlet. And I think, you know, that's really what's going to, every decade, that is what has like saved the world. So I think that'll, you know, continue to do so.
I hope so. Well, Chris, it was so great talking to you in person, and you know, it's been fun. Our big friendship we've made over email and social media and what have you. But I'm glad to finally meet you in person. You know, that's a good thing.
Well,
yeah.
I really appreciate you having me on the show, and you know, I definitely am looking forward to talking to you again about, you know, other projects later in the year. You know, definitely will be
coming back. Absolutely. Well, it's about that time, and what'll happen is this will be converted to a podcast and put out on all the various social media platforms, including iTunes. If you are listening to this show, this podcast on iTunes in the future, I always say this too, it's for free on iTunes. There's no charge for that. That's why we have commercials during the show. That's how we keep the lights on. So support those advertisers. But anyway, this will be converted and out there and everything probably in about an hour, hopefully sooner. And yeah, it's the weekend. Oh, I forgot. Happy Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas and all of
Merry
that.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And happy Hanukkah. That happens too this weekend. And, you know, whatever it is you happen to be getting down with, well, I hope you have a good time with it. Yeah, I will be back on Tuesday. We've got one of the old friends of the show, Ed Roman, a indie singer-songwriter from Ontario. He's got a new single out, and it's just phenomenal. He'll be on Tuesday night from the Great White North, and we'll be back then. I hope everybody has just a fantastic Christmas and whatnot. And remember, folks, if you have elderly neighbors or somebody that's, you know, not maybe spending the holiday by themselves, everybody's got an extra chair, man, or a stool or something. Invite them over, you know. Let's all try to be a little better to each other and you know, kind of think on that. If something happened, heaven forbid, you'd feel really bad if you didn't. So keep an eye on your surroundings, folks. Chris, have a great night and a super holiday.
You too. Thank you so much.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Jamie Roxx's Pop Rock Talk Radio Show has been executive produced by Jamie Roxx for Pop Rock Limited, recorded at Deerfield Beach in South Florida for broadcast at Blog Talk Radio.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Roxx.
Blog Talk Radio.